From Relay FM, this is Upgrade, episode 301. Today's show is brought to you by Pingdom, Bombas, and Uni Pizza Ovens. My name is Mike Hurley, and I'm joined by Jason Snell. Hello, Jason Snell.
Hello, Mike Hurley. I'm present. I'm here. I'm ready.
This episode, it is the calm before the storm, right? We've got a lot of stuff going on over the next few weeks. This is the last episode before things start to change again, I guess, with WWDC-related stuff. We'll talk about that a little later on in the episode today. But, of course, I have a hashtag SnellTalk question from Nathan. And Nathan asks, Jason, on macOS, what is the alert sound that you use? Do you use ping, pop, or purr? You know?
Those are all sounds that you're allowed. I don't use any of them. I don't use a default sound. I use a custom sound. We'll put a link in the show notes to my article on Six Colors that I wrote about this. Because you can make like custom audio files and save them and then use them as your own beep. You don't need to use the system beeps if you don't want to. And the backstory here is when I was in, and we're going a long way back here. When I was in college, there was an app for the classic Mac OS called Soundmaster, which allowed you to put, it was really kind of evil. This is by a guy named Bruce Tomlin. It allowed you to attach a sound effect to many different aspects of Mac OS. Like, it would play a sound when you started up. It would play a sound when you chose restart. It would play a sound when you chose shutdown. It would play a sound if you put a disk in. It would play a sound if you ejected the disk. It would play a sound on your beep. It would play a sound when you clicked a key. It would play a sound if you could have it be like you hit the delete key. It would play a sound.
This is the kind of stuff that people did on their computers before they had the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, man.
You had this computer, and the computer could do things, but it was only things that you could do, so you just had to find stuff to do.
Yeah, so I had, a college girlfriend had HAL 9000 say, my mind is going every time she shut her computer down.
That's
which
good.
Which is pretty funny.
That's good.
I had, this is going to say a lot about who I am. When I ejected a disc for a period of time, you would hear William Shatner from his album The Transformed Man from the song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds shouting, "And she's gone!" as the disc ejected. I thought that was hilarious.
That's pretty funny one time.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, you know, if you don't eject discs that often, then you're like, oh, yeah, right. That was William Shatner, right?
Yeah.
But if you're doing it all the time, it will make you want to murder. So the answer, though, is one of the sounds that came with Soundmaster that you could use, because it came with some sound files, because it was, at that point, non-trivial to make your own sound files. I eventually bought this thing called the Mac Recorder, and that's how I got the William Shatner thing in there and all of that. But it came with a bunch of sounds. And one of the sounds that came with Soundmaster is a person's voice saying in kind of a monotone, beep.
Beep.
Just saying the word beep.
Beep.
And I thought that was hilarious. And I made it my beep sound. And when I left Soundmaster behind, I got that sound. I extracted that sound. And that extraction from my Mac in the 90s has been converted various times. When we went to OS X and you had to have it in a different format, I converted it to a different format. And that has been my beep sound since I was in college. And it still is my beep sound. Is a voice saying beep. That's it. That's my answer.
Thank you to Nathan for that great question, which went into places no one was expecting. If you would like to submit a question to help us open an episode of Upgrade, just send out a tweet with the hashtag SnellTalk, and it will be potentially included in a future episode. Thank you to everybody that does that. So I wanted to follow up a little bit on how we opened our show last week, talking about Black Lives Matter and a lot of the issues that are occurring in the US and elsewhere, including the protests and stuff like that. And one of the reasons I want to bring it up again this week is that Tim Cook posted an open letter on Apple.com talking about his feelings in regards to the current situation regarding systemic racism. It was on the front page, right? So like all really kind of good Apple open letters, right? When they want you to see them, they put them on Apple.com. Tim doesn't do this as much as Steve used to. I think, Tim does them for like things that are important to the world. Tim does. Steve used to do them for kind of like spite, right?
Yeah.
like the Flash exactly letter right. and stuff. So yeah. there's a good difference between the two of them. It's very well written. But there was one part in it that I wanted to highlight specifically because I thought that it was really important and it put into words something that I think is useful to hear. So I'll read the quote, which is, "This is a moment when many people may want nothing more than a return to normalcy or to a status quo that is only comfortable if we avert our gaze from injustice. As difficult as it may be to admit, that desire is itself a sign of privilege. George Floyd's death is shocking and tragic proof that we must aim higher than a normal future and build one that lives up to the highest ideals of equality and justice." And I think this part is really key. Because it says something that is useful to bear in mind, which is that things are starting to happen, right? And there are some wrongs starting to be righted and changes occurring. But it's important to remember that we don't just accept those and think it's all good, right? Oh, great, these police officers were put in prison. These rules were changed. We're all good now.
Problem solved.
Exactly, because that's not even the fix. It's not what the problem is. They're like a level above, right? So we need to all pay attention to and remember how we're feeling now and find ways to continue paying attention and making change going forward. And I'm doing that. I know we're all doing that. And I encourage other people to think of it too. Like, if there are a bunch of things that change stuff, that's great. But that doesn't mean the problem is solved. And I really like the way that Tim put that in his letter, so I wanted to just share my thoughts on that.
Thank you. I want to mention something related to this, which is HBO had a show that just that was canceled after a couple of seasons. It was Wyatt Cenac, who is a correspondent and writer at The Daily Show. He was actually on an episode of The Flophouse at one point. I remember that very clearly. He did a show called Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas on HBO, 2 seasons. Fans of The Flophouse, Hallie Hagland was the head writer for that show, who was a regular on The Flophouse, regular guest. She's
one of the greatest voices in podcasting.
I love Hallie so much. Yep. So season one of Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas, it was a, you know, half hour news slash comedy show in the vein of John Oliver's show and The Daily Show and things like that. And it was on HBO, and it's actually a really nice show. It's funny. Wyatt Cenac's very funny. The set design is awesome. The graphics are great. But in season one, their big takeout piece, if you think about like John Oliver's show, they would sort of do an intro piece and a little interstitial, and then they would do a long piece at the end of the show. And season one is all about the police and police reform and police brutality and all sorts of things that are the issues that we're all grappling with now. And he tweeted last week and said, hey, HBO, wouldn't it be great if, since we covered this entire issue in season one of Problem Areas, you could make those available for everybody to see? And he just sort of did it idly. And HBO said, yes, you're right. And his whole show is on HBO. At least, I don't know if it's worldwide or if it's just in the US, but it's there's a playlist. We'll put a link in the show notes.
It's on YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah. So you can watch it for free on YouTube. And it's a funny show, but it's also a really good dive into that topic. And because they spent all season talking about it, they get the opportunity to spend time on all sorts of different angles of it, from, you know, from bias to can you reform a police department, you know, like lots of different angles that I thought were really good. So it's a good show. I recommend it, and you can watch it for free.
Great. So we're going to keep talking about this, right? Like, everyone should, and it's important to keep paying attention. We got great feedback from some listeners, and I thought it was really nice. We can try and all come together on this. It's super important. Next week, it's draft time. The WWDC 2020 draft will begin on next week's episode. So both me and Jason will be working hard over the next week, coming up with our picks. It's kind of like sharpening our brain swords or something. I don't know. To do battle. I'm really excited. The draft is, I think, honestly, at this point, I think I look forward to the drafts more than the keynotes.
Oh, interesting.
Which, but that isn't a surprise to me, though, right? Like for me, I love all the weird stuff that we do on this show, and the draft is one of my favorite things. So
it's true.
And the WWDC draft is the big one. It's the biggest draft of the year.
I love that it's a little injection of normalcy into our weird world that we live in right now. That it's like, oh, yeah, right. Remember drafts and Apple events? So I guess I got to start planning my plan of attack.
It's the big one. I'm very excited. So that's going to be next week's show. And then the week after will be our post-keynote show. So it's all happening.
Yeah, what's that going to be like?
I have a couple of coronavirus-related topics I want to just bring up really quick about the way Apple is continuing to respond to COVID-19. Don't forget, that's still out there. Hasn't been front of my mind for the last week or so, but it's still happening. Italy and Latvia have both launched apps that take advantage of the exposure notification API. So these are now running, right? Like they're available. I was actually talking to Federico earlier. He's downloaded it and is using the one in Italy. It's the first person I know personally that is using an app with the exposure notification API.
Yeah, I was impressed in there with their localization that Federico's phone is set to English and the Italian notification app had detailed instructions about how to use it in English. I thought that was very impressive.
Oh, that's really nice. I didn't think of that, but that's a really good point. Mm-hmm. So still hoping that more people are going to take advantage of this. I mean, I've been seeing some people talking over the last few days. It's a very good point. Like, with everything that's going on right now in the world on top of the coronavirus stuff, like it's, I think for certain people like me, only highlighting more why you wouldn't want a like decentralized government based approach. Like having someone in the middle might be good. So yeah, but it's interesting to see that there are companies that are countries that are out there that have got these apps up and running. And then I also saw a report from Mark Gurman at Bloomberg on how Apple is planning and already starting to have employees return to its offices. So there's a couple of things that I'll just highlight, right? So they're doing, some people started to return in May. Apple is offering optional COVID-19 tests for those employees. They are requiring temperature checks, that people only work a few days a week in the office. They're enforcing social distancing. One detail on this, which is interesting, I hadn't considered before, only two people in an elevator at a time. Elevators are like, oh, yeah, you're super close to people, right? So elevators are going to be a weird one for a while. And Apple also requesting their employees to wear masks in the office too. So that's kind of what they're doing. There's nothing groundbreaking here.
All sorts of companies are struggling with this. I mean, my wife's place of business, she's a librarian. They returned to their workplace last week, and it was, you know, half the staff at a time, alternating half at home, half in the library, socially distanced, wearing masks. Like, it was a, you know, it's not back to normal. It's back to a seriously modified kind of thing, and trying to figure out the best way to get some people back in the office without you know, putting them at risk. So everybody's trying different stuff, and we'll see how it goes. A lot of this reopening is going to lead to increases in incidence of the virus. So everybody's just going to watch and hopefully do the right things to not spread it around.
Mm-hmm. There has to be some kind of level, right, that's in between where we were before and where we've been for the last few months.
Yeah, ideally you want to go from complete shutdown to something that's safe but a little bit more open in order to kind of ride it out, I think.
Yeah. Yep, and we've got to work. Everyone's got to work together on it. This is something that we're only going to get through if we all pull together. So, there's a lot of that going around right now. Upstream, let's do some headlines in streaming media. Apple have hired Jim DiLorenzo away from Amazon.
Jim DiLorenzo,
everyone's favorite. The interesting part here is that DiLorenzo is a sports person, and they will be heading up sports for Apple TV Plus, according to Peter Kafka.
Yeah, so he was involved in a lot of Amazon's kind of, they've done some experimentation with sports and with live sports and deals with sport. They did some, they've got some Premier League deals in the UK. They've done some NFL deals in the US. And for this guy to go to Apple, I want to just not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but we had a conversation a few weeks ago on Upstream about live sports as a potential target based on a different report for Apple, and the idea that there are lots of sports rights that are coming up and there are a lot of sports entities that are really excited about the idea that different streaming services are going to lead to an even bigger kind of feeding frenzy where they're going to make even more money because the streamers are going to want to get people to basically force them to subscribe to their stream to get their live sports that they want, and that is potentially a big trend. This is also why all the cable companies the earlier part of the last decade spent huge amounts of money for long-term deals with a lot of sports properties, because they were afraid that there would be cord cutting and that their hedge against it was live sports. So live sports is one of those things that if you don't care about sports, you know, you don't care about it. But for a large number of people, live sports is one of the few levers that you can use to force people into a particular provider because they have a favorite team or a favorite sport. And they, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, well, there's this TV show I heard was good, but I'm not going to watch it. But if it's like, it's your favorite team and now they're only over here, the power is enormous. And then also keep in mind that it's also like live TV versus on demand, and that's a different profile because you want to watch that live. So this is going to be, if the rush to create streaming services was the story of the last few years, and now we're kind of in that era where everybody's kind of got that and they're all going to be battling, I feel like the story of the next 5 years, at least in part, is going to be over exclusive stuff like sports deals, because that's one way that you get people to sign up for Apple TV Plus, is to say, if you want to watch whatever it is, you have to sign up for Apple TV Plus. I will also say there is a positive here for consumers, which is some sports stuff isn't accessible. Like famously, and they just changed this, but in LA for the last few years, most people in LA couldn't watch the Dodgers on TV. Because the Dodgers, the baseball team in LA, by the way, they signed an exclusive agreement with one cable company, and that cable company tried to extort a big fee out of the other cable companies in LA, and they had a dispute, and like many people in LA just couldn't get their local team. Or the NFL package that lets you see any NFL game live, not just the one that's being shown in your local market, was sold to DirecTV, which is a satellite provider. So if you had cable, you couldn't see it. Like, you literally had to put a satellite dish on your roof if you wanted to see it. So we've seen companies use sports as leverage to get people onto their platform before, but also a streaming service, the barrier is less, right? You don't have to install hardware. It doesn't matter like where you live. You can sign up for the streaming service. So on that level, it's not great because it's like, I don't want to sign up for the streaming service that I don't actually want, but my favorite team is on it. I get that. I do prefer, though, the idea that I can just sign up for a streaming service for the season and then cancel it. Then I need to install something on my roof or move to a place where the cable company shows my team, because those are not great. So we got to keep an eye on this, because I think it's very clear now that Apple is going to make a play for live sports. We talked about them buying a catalog and old stuff. And maybe you know, that's not their strategy, but their strategy is original programming, and that includes live sports programming.
Frankly, if you hire somebody to head up a sports division, you at least have some plans to do something related to sports. Which
sure
is,
seems like
I would
it,
expect,
doesn't it?
More than what they've done sports-related content before, which is ultimately like documentary-type focused stuff is what they're looking to do. And you probably don't need a sports person for that part of the division, right? Like, it's a different idea.
Yeah, and there's lots of different sports out there. I mean, there's the major sports in America, but like, there are also the off-brand sports. So that's, do they sign a deal to do the NFL in Europe? Do they sign a deal to do the, you know, Bundesliga in America, right? Like, there's a lot of different angles to take here, but when they hired those two guys from Sony to do original programming, we knew they were going to do original programming. And this looks very mm-hmm. much like Apple is absolutely going to do sports. It's just a matter of what and when.
And if they're able to even get the deals that they want, right? Like,
yes.
They can have all the intention that they like, but maybe nobody wants to sell them the rights, or they just won't pay enough. We'll see.
As the Discord just pointed out, they missed their chance on the Marvel races because John Oliver got that. So they're going to have to wait for the next cycle of sponsorship for Marvel races.
There's a new Apple TV Plus show called Dear... It's been released. I hadn't heard about this. I don't know if Apple had announced this one before now. It seems like it is probably a relatively small production. It was influenced by their Apple Watch marketing campaign. Do you remember the ads they did where they featured letters written by customers talking about how the watch changed their lives? This is particularly notable because two upgrade listeners have been featured in those ads, which is a funny thing. This series features stars like Oprah Winfrey, Stevie Wonder, and Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it features letters from fans whose lives have been impacted by these individuals. So they, I guess, I haven't seen the show yet, but I can imagine what it is. They read a letter and talk about it. This feels, from a conceptual standpoint, a lot more akin to the stuff that Apple did before TV Plus. Like, not very...
Yeah. Little Planet of the Apps, little carpool karaoke. Like, yeah. We had an ad campaign, so let's make a show out of it.
Yeah, just like from where the idea came from, it's not like... the HBO level of, the show, I bet, is really heartwarming and like can be good, but I just mean, like, from a where the idea come from doesn't really feel the same as like For All Mankind, right? Like it's a different level of TV. This is less prestige TV, right? Which is what they've been trying to do, it seems, with their other stuff. I just found that interesting. I guess they just figured, like, oh, we have these creators that we have these relationships with, we had this great idea, why don't we just put these two things together? It was just intriguing to me that, one, it came out, seemingly came out of nowhere, and two, it features a kind of production style that seems to be stuff that Apple had moved away from already.
Yeah, I agree. That's a weird one. But hey, you know, you need to... You're programming a spread of stuff, right?
Got
to
fill
appeal
up the
to
calendar.
Different audiences and all of that. And mm-hmm. I get it. I get it. It's not my cup of tea.
And Netflix has purchased the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood.
Boom.
There's a bunch of details in this, but I guess the point is they can now show their movies in a theater. They can now get into the Oscars.
Yeah, so this is a beautifully restored historic theater. It was built in the 20s, I want to say, and about 10 years ago, an organization bought it to rehab it because it's a historic landmark. And now they've sold it for an undisclosed sum to Netflix. I hope they made some money on this. I think that that would be great. And it's a great thing for Netflix to become the steward of this. The goal here. So it seems like, I mean, how often... Netflix does have movies a lot, though, right? Like, this could literally be the Netflix movie theater, where if you want to see a Netflix movie, you can go to the Netflix mm-hmm. movie theater, which is the Egyptian. And it also means that every single movie that they show there will have a qualifying run for the Academy Awards, which is sort of the mm-hmm. the point. Although I think it's a fun idea.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could see movies for free if you were a Netflix subscriber? That would be fun.
That would be cool. Like, sign up and get a ticket and all of that. Yeah. But I like the idea. I like the idea that, and you know, you got to pay for popcorn or something, but I also like the idea of going to filmmakers about Netflix and saying, yes, this Netflix is buying this and this is going to be a Netflix original, but we will have at least our one theater. Like, we'll have a theatrical run. If you want to do an opening night and come and do that.
They could do premieres now.
Exactly right. Like, do that, and then it appears on Netflix too. Mm-hmm. But we also did that. It's interesting. I wonder if they're going to do any because it was retrofit to do like revivals and old prints and stuff like that. If their plan is to sort of like program the theater, but also have it in their back pocket to screen movies, or if it's literally going to become Netflix's Egyptian theater and it's just, you know, it's the Lovebirds this week.
So it's actually a bit of both. So. The company American Cinematheque, that the organization that bought the theater to restore it, they are going to continue to program the theater and will run.
Oh, good. So there you go.
Their own content, and then Netflix will also be putting
stuff revivals.
Into it. Yep.
Yeah, because they can play like nitrate film and stuff mm-hmm. there, which is super rare and old and flammable, and like, so that's great. So basically Netflix has a venue that they can use when they want to put something in for award competition, but otherwise it's also still going to be a venue. It's because it's a huge classic movie house for classic movies. That's awesome. But yes, Netflix is soon every streaming service will own a fancy theater in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, where this world is going. Yeah.
Yeah, because they might all be up for sale soon, unfortunately. Uh-huh. This episode is brought to you by our friends over at Uni Pizza Oven is the world's number one pizza oven company. They make surprisingly small ovens that are powered by your choice of either wood, charcoal, or gas, letting you make restaurant-quality pizza in your own backyard. Everyone wants to make pizzas as they're spending more time at home, so why not treat yourself to the very best tool for the job? Uni Pizza Ovens are super easy to use and super portable too. You can basically fit one of these into any outside space. It's really quite remarkable. Uni Pizza Ovens can reach temperatures of up to 900 degrees Fahrenheit, 500 degrees Celsius, letting you cook restaurant quality pizza in as little as 60 seconds in your own backyard. It is that high temperature that separates average pizzas that you make in a home oven from the quality that you can get from an Uni Pizza Oven. It's twice the heat. One of their new models is the Uni Coda 16. This is a gas-powered oven that can cook up to 16-inch pizzas and has an innovative L-shaped burner at the back that gives you even heat distribution. And this is the very oven that I believe Jason Snow has in his home.
Well, it's not in my home. It's outside my home.
Yeah,
it's,
that's best.
It's
that's...
just slightly outside my home. Uh-huh. But yes, it's great. I love it. I have made several pizzas. I actually need to make some pizza dough this week so that we can have more pizzas. And the thing about it is I've been cooking in my oven on a pizza stone for a couple of decades now. It's literally the pizza stone was a wedding present. So I guess 25 plus years now. But 500 degrees is good, but it's not like what a professional pizza oven would have. And so the Uni will go up to, it's like 700 degrees, something like that. Yeah.
900.
It's very... very high if you want it to be that way. And that means the dough actually cooks and the fast, and it's like a big broiler, so the top gets all crispy and happens really fast. Like you stick it in and then and turn it around a couple of times, and then after a minute you pull it out and you've got a pizza, which has actually encourages you to make more multiple smaller pizzas, which is what I do, mm-hmm. which is fun, instead of having to sort of separate where the pepperoni ends from, you know, where my son's plain cheese pizza is going to be. Just make two pizzas because it'll only take a couple of minutes. I love pizza. This is super easy. It's using literally the same propane canister as my gas grill. Just unhook it from one and hook it up to the other, and it works fine. And it's been a lot of fun to use it. And there's been a lot of pizza made, but I need to make more.
Don't we all always? Uni Pizza Oven start at just $199. They have free shipping to the US, the UK, and the EU, as well as the Uni Coda 16. One of their other coolest models is the Uni Karu, which can use wood, charcoal, or gas power to cook your pizza. Uni also have an amazing app that can help you perfect your dough recipe and give you loads of pizza making tips. Listeners of this show can get 10% off their purchase of an Uni Pizza Oven, which is up to $50 off a Coda 16. Just go to uni.com and use the code upgrade at checkout. That is OONI.com and the code upgrade at checkout. These things are super popular right now, so make sure that you do not miss out. Uni Pizza Ovens are the best way to bring restaurant quality pizza to your own backyard. So go to uni.com and use the code upgrade for 10% off. Our thanks to Uni Pizza Ovens for their support of this show and Relay FM. So this is our last week that we get to have the opportunity really to talk about wishes without there being competition involved. There's no stakes on the line this week. So mm-hmm. I thought that we could actually, I think, focus on the platform that could be argued, and I believe, deserves the most love this year, which is iPadOS, because it's the newest platform, if you're going to consider it that, right? Like, it's a brand yep. new platform. And the iPad has a lot of places that it can gain to give it, to really make it what it should be and what people want it to be.
Yeah, I think the truth is that the iPad has this really interesting combination of being a fairly young platform and also have a very ambitious platform. And so even though Apple Watch is a younger platform and iPhone is not that much older, like, first off, the iPhone took the brunt of the focus of iOS development for a long time. And the Watch is not quite as ambitious in a lot of ways. There's not to say that there aren't things that could be improved about the Watch, because it absolutely could be. But I look at the iPad specifically, and I think it's this combination where Apple is really trying to make it a more professional platform mm-hmm. on the iPad Pro end, and it just seems like there's the most space for them. Of all of Apple's platforms, it's the one that I look at and say, I could write a list a mile long of things that you should do on this platform. And they can't do them all, but like, it's the easiest one when you're looking at a wish list, easiest one to fill out.
So I put a link in the show notes to an actual wish list that you spoke about, Macworld, and also there's an episode of App Stories that I enjoyed recently where Federico and John went through theirs, and I'm kind of putting a lot of that stuff, some of my own thoughts together, and we'll just talk about a few key areas that could see some love and we would love to see. And who knows if any of these will end up making their way into draft picks next week. Not impossible. One of them is keyboard improvements. You know, I feel like everyone can agree that like we have really great cursor support on iPadOS now. Like, it's rock solid, super thought well from the ground up. It's got basically all the features that you would want. I'm super happy with it. I don't have any real improvements that I would want from the cursor. But the keyboard is an area that could see some additional love and care like the cursor got, right? Like, we have great keyboard options. The hardware keyboards are great. The fact that we can connect USB keyboards, Bluetooth keyboards, you know, you can go wild with it. I think it would be great to see the keyboard more embraced across the entire system, right? So
yeah,
allowing us to have keyboard shortcuts and stuff like that, but more than the shortcuts that we have inside of applications, right?
Yeah, I want user assignable keyboard shortcuts. And right now you can do that, but only with the modifier keys. And there's a very small number of things that you can choose. So like, you can remodify the globe to be the escape key or something like that. It's a nice start. But given that Apple's two iPad keyboards don't have a function row, I really want, at the very least, like minimum, Apple needs to let me assign keyboard shortcuts for media control and screen brightness and on the Magic Keyboard backlight brightness.
Yep.
Like, there need to be keyboard shortcuts. If they're not the function keys, which they're not because they don't exist, they need to go somewhere. And I'd actually like it to be more than that. I'd actually like Apple to allow you to assign all sorts of other functions to system-wide keyboard shortcuts. And I know that that's complicated, but this is a major iPadOS update, so now is the time to do it. And put down the rules of like what happens if an app wants to have a particular shortcut, but it's been assigned. Do they mark off a certain set of keys and say, don't use these in your apps or something like that? Or, you know, there's not like there isn't complexity here, but the Mac handles it. And I use those assignments on the Mac all the time. I don't actually adjust my media controls with function keys. I use different keyboard shortcuts that I've been using for a long time. So I would really like it if Apple would in some way expand to have system-wide keyboard shortcuts that are user assignable. And then on top of that, yes, I would also like to be able to assign those to shortcuts, right? So that I could also have some sort of automation that I can just fire off with a keyboard shortcut. But even if it was the minimum of like, you press the globe key, you can set it so the globe key is a function key and then the numbers become function keys. So I could do, you know, globe 6, adjust the volume or whatever they are. Right. So I feel like that's the it's great that they brought the cursor support essentially forward from iOS 14 in order to get it out the door for this new product. But like, the keyboards still aren't, you know, there's been no movement there. So that's like the easiest thing, not necessarily to implement, but the easiest thing to look at and say what's lacking, especially when you've got a brand new keyboard and trackpad product like they do, is the keyboard's not as functional as it should be.
Yeah. And there are so many areas you could go with it, and it can be purely hidden to most users, right? Like, this could just be a very much pro user thing, and that's
off
great
by default.
Yep. Give us some of those, right? Like, this is something that Craig Federighi, I think he spoke about with Federico on their interview last year when at WWDC on App Stories, where I think he was talking a little bit about, and I think maybe he spoke about this too on the talk show, just about the idea that some things can be discoverable easily by the user and some things aren't, and it's fine to have both.
Although I would argue that holding down the globe key and then pressing numbers is even sort of discoverable or at least easily teachable.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's not a default for the Smart Keyboard and the Magic Keyboard, that if you tap and hold, you hold down that globe key and then you can quickly adjust volume and stuff like that. I don't know why they didn't do that, but here we are.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Guy Rambo, did a whole Twitter thread that was great where he basically mocked up an interactive emoji picker for iPadOS, because one of my frustrations with emoji input, especially if you're using a keyboard, but in general, like, you know, it's not a very good emoji picker. There are lots of emoji now, and it's hard to find the one that you want. And he did a beautiful example of using the essentially the emoji keyboard shortcut from macOS to bring up a picker where you can then type in the name of the emoji and select it and have it automatically insert where you're typing. And that's absolutely how it should work, especially with a keyboard on iPadOS. So we'll throw that in there too as a keyboard improvement. Is emoji input ought to be way easier than it is now.
So talking about keyboard shortcuts, let's talk about actual shortcuts. The application itself, it's almost a meme at this point, but folders and organization in shortcuts would be a wonderful thing at this point.
I would take filters on color or tags or whatever. Like if they're like, no, folders are old, man. Now every shortcut can have a color and a tag, and then you could filter on those. Like, that's fine. Just give me an organizational principle of some sort so I don't have this giant list of shortcuts that's just kind of like in a big bin, mm-hmm. which is what it is now. And I don't even have that many compared to people like Federico, but like, yes, and larger than that, like beyond folders, it's things like if you make shortcuts, like if you come up with a really clever chain of like 10 items that does a thing and you're like, wow, I could use this in a different shortcut, you can't take it to a different shortcut. You can't or later in the same shortcut. You literally can't like select all those items and duplicate them. Like you can't like select uh-huh. them all and then option drag or whatever, or copy them and then paste them. It can't be done. The only way you can really do it is if you're making a new shortcut, you can duplicate the old shortcut in order to get all of those things and then build your new shortcut around it. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the kind of thing. Also, sharing should be easier. I'm glad they have sharing, because for a while, I think in betas, it was gone. Yep. But you have to like go into the settings and then flip this super scary sounding switch. And it's like, danger, people can run things on your iPad. It's scary. And it's like, I wish that was a friendlier kind of thing. And also the one that kills me and has killed me since the beginning, since it was an app called Workflow, which is, you know, I appreciate the transparency of when you tap on a shortcut, it opens the shortcuts app and shows you every single step scrolling by really fast as it runs the shortcut. That's great. I want a little switch that says, I don't need to see this. Just run it. I don't need to see the source code of my apps as I use them scrolling past, right? Like I don't need that. So having the ability to, as a user option, not show all the details of the shortcut as I'm running it, but just do the thing that I want to do.
Yeah, that's why I really love the widget. Because if you can activate right. something from the widget, there's just a little progress bar that fills up and it just does the thing. I
agree.
It's the fastest way to run a shortcut, honestly.
Yes. Oh, trust me, I have built shortcuts that are meant to be run from a widget, and when you run them by pressing play, even if you run them tapping on them in shortcuts versus pressing play while you're in the list, like the scrolling by thing, it's way slower, mm-hmm. right? Because it's going to have to display all the code as you're going. It's yep. like, I don't need to see that. I just don't. So I hope that we've, in the life cycle of shortcuts, there was like the, hey, we're now part of Apple. Let's do the basic things to run and ship with the system. And then the next step was, we're going to make the kind of the language of shortcuts simpler by having kind of nouns and verbs. Great. That was last year. This year, I'm hoping that it's the kind of user interface consolidation step that happens, where they get, in addition to hopefully keyboard shortcut activation, the ability to just make it easier to make and organize these things.
Yeah, I would like automation to be pushed a little bit further. You know, for my phone, for my iPad to be looking for triggers and operating on them itself.
That's a great
one. For example, if I see, you know, if I say to shortcuts, oh, hey, every time you see an item on this calendar, run this shortcut, you know?
Right.
So then every time I sit down to record a podcast, I've already got everything set. Like, it's already running all my timers. My phone's already on Do Not Disturb because it's looking at the calendar for me. And doing those things, you know, you can have it be really slow to start. Stuff like calendar events, email, you know, like things that Apple can control to a degree, right. if you want to like take baby steps into this. But allowing shortcuts to really operate and work on its own whilst also not telling me, you know, like, don't give me a notification that I have to tap or whatever to make it work. Just
exactly.
take that next step and go a bit further. I mean, and while we're also talking about shortcuts, before I forget, give me shortcuts on the Mac too, please. I would like that.
Yeah, sure. I will also say recurring events is a thing that shortcuts really lacks right now. The idea, Because, and I see that people ask, like, can I do this thing where a shortcut waits for this thing to happen and then acts? And the answer is no, you can't. Like, you can't, with a very limited set of things. You can't say, I have a shortcut that checks for a status of something. And if the status is true, it does something. And I want that to fire off. It's what on a computer we would call like a cron job or something. I want to fire it off every half hour, or I want to fire it off every 15 minutes between the hours of this, mm-hmm. or I want it to fire off every 4 hours, or I want to fire it off at 2 and 4 and 6 p.m. Like, it can't. I have these home automations that are incredibly detailed, and I can only run them one time a day. I can say like at 3 p.m. do this. And that's really bad because you can't even duplicate home automations. So I can't duplicate it and make another one at 2 p.m. and another one at 1 p.m. But it's just, so stuff like that, that makes really for automations to work. Sometimes you do need automations that can repeat and check for a status of something. Or even better yet, be fired off, as you say, fired off when something happens, which would be great. So yes, all of that on the list. More shortcuts, please.
Now, had you thought much about multitasking changes at all for iPad?
I am not as angry about multitasking interface than as other people are. Like, mm-hmm. my big one is the clarity over keyboard focus and having better keyboard, to go back to keyboards for a bit, better keyboard multitasking. So the idea that I could not only see which app, if I'm in split view, is active and that my keyboard, my key commands are going to go to, but also to be able to toggle between them. So it's like, oh, I'm over in Safari right now. I want to be in Notes, and do something to get over there. And you can't really do that either. So I don't necessarily want to see a complete rethink of all multitasking. I don't like the multi-window thing that is built. And if they want to do a rethink of multitasking, I'll welcome it. Like, I would love to see it. I don't think multitasking is great right now, but I'm, maybe I'm just trying to compromise and be realistic about it and say, I really want them to fix some of the very annoying things about it. But if they've got a new concept for it, I'm all ears. I'm ready to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's iOS 14. I would expect some refinements in iOS 14, but if right. Apple truly are working on an overhaul of the system, I think that is further down the line. I do genuinely expect there to be some things that are tidied up or highlighted in different ways, but I don't expect there to be a big sweeping change. It just seems like it's not now, honestly, and it's so that would be such a large thing that I could even imagine them, kind of like what happened with a bunch of things that we got in the first iPad OS and like the cursor support of like this was supposed to be in 14, but they've ended up pushing it because it's too large, And the rumors, the thing we're going to talk about next, which is like changes to the home screen, was apparently going to be in 13, but they pushed it because it's so large. Right. I would be really surprised to see Apple make significant changes to the home screen and multitasking in the same release. I think they would pick one and do that. It would surprise me to see all of that change in one, because that's at that point you basically feel like you're using a completely different operating system to the one that you had before. Right. Might be a bit too much.
One of the things that you can sometimes see with Apple is that they will bring a suite of features in because they're all kind of like connected. Mm-hmm. So you'll be like, well, why did they add this? Oh, it's because they also added this. And mm-hmm. there's an item that's later on our list, which is about the famous sort of what if they support an external display. So you can put a big screen attached to an iPad. And now that you've got keyboard and mouse support, you don't have to just mirror it. You can just run your app on that. And I actually run into this sometimes when I'm using my 12.9-inch iPad Pro in vertical orientation, which is I sometimes think, why can't I just run apps at top and bottom instead of side to side? Why can't I do that?
Oh, that's a very good point.
Right? So that, well, and this is the thing is, then I look at my giant, iMac screen here, and I think about a big screen, maybe not this big, for an iPad as an external display. And I think, well, if you're going to do external display support, are you going to force people to only run one or two apps side by side, left and right? Or would you maybe let people cut up the screen a little bit differently. And I could probably make a case that that would be, you know, if you're going to do external display support, maybe you add the ability to have some more, some sort of different ways to organize your multitasking, but not necessarily a total multitasking overhaul as much as a, you know, we're going to let you subdivide the iPad screen top and bottom. And on external displays, you're going to be able to subdivide it a couple of different ways. So you could run four things at once or two things at once or whatever it is. I could maybe see that. But I agree with you that it seems that would be a lot in a period where I think they're going to want to not bite off more than they can chew right now. To redesign the home screen and multitasking does seem like a lot.
I will touch on the external display support thing. I would really like that personally, like to be much more than it is now, whether it's like a second screen.
They got all the pieces now. You can literally dock your iPad to a docking station with a keyboard and a mouse and run the apps and have it all work and make sense.
Yep.
So I would be, honestly, I would be shocked if this isn't in there, because everything they did in the last cycle enabled this. So why not do it? Unless they feel like there are some serious multitasking issues and they don't want to deal with those right now. Because I guess I would get that. But yeah, it's time. Not everybody's going to want to do that. Again, the whole story of the iPad is about it being a flexible computing device. And, you know, Federico uses it in a bunch of different ways. And I use it in some different ways. And one of the ways that he uses it that I don't is docked. But right now, the docking experience at a desk is not great to an external monitor. Great. And they could fix that pretty. And then that just expands the number of use cases for the iPad. If you do that, you can now, you know, you've got your keyboard and trackpad. You've got it as a touch tablet. You've got it with the Apple Pencil. And now you've got it at a desk with a big monitor. That's great. Fantastic.
And so then the home screen changes. Stuff like widgets, documents. I would really love to see the iPad OS home screen become a mix between the best of iOS and the best of macOS. Like the ability to have app icons, but then also folders from files just on the desktop, and then some interactive, really usable widgets that I can use basically elements of applications without opening the application. Like I would love a text entry box for my to-do manager and my calendar just on the home screen. Right, so I can just enter those in and really make the iPad OS home screen much more of a destination to do things than just a place to open applications. That's what I would like to see.
That's great. And you could see how they might do that by sort of expanding what a widget is capable of, so that it's more, you can do more with widgets than you know, especially now that you can put widgets, it's only last year that you could put widgets on the home screen.
Yes.
So that was a start.
Yeah, it was definitely a start, but it's not enough, right? Like, this should take some serious rethinking. And some of it should find its way to the iPhone, too. You know, this model of these grids of applications that are forced to fit in a certain way and they cannot be adapted, like that model, I think, is time for a change. It's been long enough that we've had that. And there are real useful things you could do. It's not just change for the sake of change, but there could be significant improvements that could be made to the springboard experience with a change in iOS. I mentioned the files, kind of like adding maybe files or documents to the home screen. The Files app should always be improved. It still feels like it needs a lot.
I was just going to say that the Files app, like, I don't even think I have a list this year of new features for the Files app. I feel like they added a lot of new features. My request for the Files app is it needs to work. It needs to work better. It's unreliable. It's messy. It just needs love. It needs to be better.
It feels slow. And you know, when you use Finder, you just feel like you're in control of the file system. When I use Files, I feel like I am using the file system, but dragging it through molasses. Like, everything is more slow. Everything needs more taps. You know, you end up with these weird windows that pop up.
And stuff stops working.
Yeah, things just are completely unreliable.
And then you don't know how to get there, and you have to remove like a server and add it back in. And you drag things from one place to another, hoping they'll copy. But there is often no feedback about whether the file exists or has been moved or anything. It's better with certain instances than others. Like if you're just on your iPad dragging to different folders, it's pretty straightforward. But if you're using a network or a cloud or something like that, it's just a mess. And so I'm glad they added all those features last year. It's great. Thank you. Just make it better. Just make it more reliable. I just want to rely on it and have it work with all of my stuff. And I know where the files are, and I know I can add a favorite that is a folder on my server and it stays there and doesn't vanish sometimes, and so that I can never use favorites. That's been a case. Favorites in the Files app's been broken for years now. So yeah, better. How about that? Better. Just make it better.
It has gotten consistently better every year, right? From not having it to having it and then having the improvements. But it started at such a low point. There still is so much more needed for this part of the operating system, which is a very important part of the operating system. I'm happy that it exists, but I definitely want more from it. What about pro apps? Do you expect that we're going to see any significant Apple-made pro apps?
Well, my expectations will be revealed in the draft next week, Mike. But I don't know. Part of me wants a sign. Like, I'm not going to use Xcode or, you know, alternate name for iPad-based development tool. I'm not going to use it. But I would welcome it. I would welcome it. It doesn't have to be Final Cut. It doesn't have to be Logic. It could be Xcode or Xcode for iPad, which is a subset, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. I just want to see Apple make a commitment to pro apps instead of what they currently have, which is GarageBand and iMovie and Swift Playgrounds, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you believe your platform is pro, why are your pro apps not on it? So I hope they will make the commitment to at least one of those. But if I had to put money down, well, we'll see next week. But right now, it hasn't happened yet. So I'm really pessimistic about it, but I hope I'm wrong. In my Macworld story, I mentioned the terminal too, which is, I know it's wild.
That one was a surprise to me.
And people are like, well, you can't do that because of security. It's like, I don't know. I mean, there's ISH, which is a third party app that basically is emulating a PC, and it's got a sandbox and it's got access to the file sandbox, so you can see files on the file system, and then you're running, you know, Unix commands inside it. Like, Apple could build a terminal, which would be very helpful for a lot of developers, actually, that was secure inside iPad OS if they wanted to. And it's like, well, why not do that? Like, I have so many things that I do on my Mac that are running little shell scripts or little Perl scripts or little, you know, whatever they are, and then little Unix commands, and they're great. And I'd use them in shortcuts on the iPad if I could. But the only way to do that now is to actually go to a remote server via SSH and do it there and then take the data back, which is not so great. So, sure, I just thought I'd pile that on of like, show me you're serious. That's really, I don't even want to request specifics here. I really just want Apple to show us that they're serious about the iPad as a professional platform in whatever form they choose. Whatever. Take your pick. Whatever.
Yeah, this is I don't think, I want these. I don't think we're going to get the one that I want, which is Logic, right? Okay, not yet. But I do feel like it's time to show your hand a little bit with one of them, right? Which is exactly that.
Yeah, exactly. Just show us that you're serious about it. I don't care what the demonstration is. It can be symbolic. It could literally be, we plan to bring, you know, by the time you developers are in San Jose next year for WWDC, there'll be an app that you can use to build apps on your iPad.
Yep.
Right, that's all. Or we intend to ship versions of Logic and Final Cut by the end of the year. Like, whatever the demonstration is, just give us a demonstration that you believe in this platform that you are the steward of. I also want to, this is not a pro app, but my personal frustration is that the health app isn't on iPad. Like, I still don't understand it. Like, I use my iPad all the time for stuff, and I want to look up health data. And I actually, there are a couple devices that I would probably rather attach to my iPad via Bluetooth that are health devices and log the data there rather than use my phone because of just where my iPad is in my house versus where I keep my phone. And the health app just isn't there. I don't understand it. I actually want the health app on the Mac too. I think that the health app needs to be on all of Apple's platforms, and I'm kind of baffled about why it isn't. So I'll throw it in there too.
And look, no iPad wish list will be complete from the two of us without asking for better support at the system level for audio, so we can finally record podcasts on iOS effectively.
That's it. I mean, we've detailed it before. It's pretty basic. They need an audio API. You need to be able to record different things in different apps. I would love anything that would enable something like Audio Hijack to exist on iPad. But failing that, I would like to be able to be on Skype on the iPad and also have a recording app open, recording my microphone, and ideally also recording Skype, two separate tracks at the same time. Like, audio was built very simply for the iPhone in the early days and has not been touched. And they got to do it. They got to do it. They won't. We'll be left behind again. But we're going to keep beating that drum until they hear it, because drums make sound.
So that's our wish list. It will be super interesting to see how many of those pop up next week in the draft.
Yes, and how many we're so despairing about that we're not going to bother picking them because we know Apple's not going to do it.
All right, this episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Bombas. They're the folks that make insanely comfortable socks. They have rethought every detail of the socks that we wear, so they're so much more comfortable, and I can attest to this. I absolutely love my Bombas socks. They are, without a shadow of a doubt, the most comfortable socks that I have ever worn. I really love their ankle socks. They're my big thing for Bombas. They are the most comfortable ankle socks that I have ever worn. I really love the little part that they have on the heel, like right at the top, where you kind of will pull your sock up, right? You know, like the part where you pull your sock up. They are super comfortable, and I've always had a problem with ankle socks, that wearing shoes with ankle socks will hurt my feet typically, so I have to wear like two pairs, like it's like a whole thing. Do not have that problem with Bombas. Like, without, they're the right level of thickness, the right level of comfort, and they're protecting my feet in all the places that I need. Like, super big fan of their stuff. Really awesome. They do more than keep feet cozy over at Bombas. They help give back to the most vulnerable members of their communities, because for every pair of socks that you purchase, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. Thanks to the generosity of Bombas customers, they have donated over 34 million pairs of socks and counting through their nationwide network of more than 3,000 giving partners. Give a pair when you buy a pair and get 20% off your first purchase at bombas.com/upgrade. That's bombas.com/upgrade for 20% off your first purchase. Go there now, get yourself some wonderfully comfortable socks, and give a pair to someone in need. That URL one more time is bombas.com/upgrade. You'll be treating your feet and treating somebody else as well, and you'll also get 20% off by going to that URL. Our thanks to Bombas for their support of this show and Relay FM. A couple of weeks ago, Jason said to me, Mike, I want to talk about games on the show.
Yes.
Which is a little surprising to me. I mean, we've dabbled in talking about gaming on this show every now and then, but I think that there is a known wide disparity between the two of us with video games. I'm much more of a gamer than you are.
For sure.
I want to know what is the frame of this conversation today. What do you want to talk to me about gaming?
Well, two things struck me back when I said we should talk about this. And one of them is, you recommended Round Guard a while ago when we were talking about Apple Arcade games.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been playing that a lot.
Good. It's a great game.
Or at least a lot for me. I really enjoy it. I recommend it. It's a lot of fun. And I was thinking about why that game stuck with me and what other games have stuck with me and what do they have in common? And what does that say about what appeals to me when I'm looking for a game to play? Mm-hmm. And then the other piece of data is all of my friends talking about Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
And playing that and selling fruit on their islands and stuff.
For bells.
Which is very similar to when all of my friends were talking about Stardew Valley.
Yep. Arguably, Animal Crossing is a bigger deal than Stardew was at that time, but it's a similar thing. They're similar-ish games as well.
Right. You're tending to your stuff, and you're making transactions, and you're earning stuff, and all of that.
Yeah.
And I, in a moment of self-reflection, while I was thinking of why Round Guard appealed to me, I also asked myself, why does hearing what people are doing in Animal Crossing completely repel me?
Okay. Okay. Good news. Good
and turn
news.
Turn me off and be like, wow, I don't want to do that. Because literally, I hear people talk about Animal Crossing and I think, it sounds like a lot of work. It sounds like a game where you have to do work. And I think to myself, yeah. I don't want to do work. I do enough work. I don't want to do more work. I don't want to grind on things. And I think that there is truth in the fact that there are a lot of games where the whole idea is that you grind. You do this and then this and then this and you get a thing.
If you think about it, Jason, all games are someone's work.
Wow. Okay.
They're all jobs of some kind.
Like some people are little balls that bounce around in a dungeon?
Yeah.
Like a round guard?
They're just trying to make their gold. You know, like in round guard, they're just trying to make their gold. You know, like if you play a racing game, that's someone's job. They're just a racing driver, you know? It's all someone's job.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's good. So what are the games? So we'll get into like the commonality of the games that I like, but what are the games that you like? Just so we're clear about what you like and what I like and how they're different.
So my gaming habits fall into like 2.5 areas. So the big kind of my main favorite type of game are large open world games that you have tons to do, typically in such a way that you can make your own games within the game. So examples of these include Zelda Breath of the Wild, Stardew Valley, Grand Theft Auto, the Pokemon games, and Animal Crossing. These are these large open world games where there is typically a structure, but you can also kind of veer off and do things in your own order, in your own path. In my opinion, Breath of the Wild is the very, very best game for this, in the sense that you can quite literally run into the castle that features the final boss as your first action in the game if you want to. Like, I've never played a game like that. You know, you play a game like a Grand Theft Auto game, they shut off parts of the world. You have to get to a certain point before they open them up. But that's like my main type of game, because I really love to have a thing that the game developer has presented to me as my path. But also, if I want to, I can go and spend time doing this other thing so I can approach the game how I want. My other large area of gaming is mobile games that you can just pick up and put down with infinite replayability. And some of my favorites here are Peggle, which is one of my very favorite games of all time. Round Guard is heavily influenced by Peggle. Other examples are Threes, Flip Flop Solitaire, the Altos games, both Adventure and Odyssey, and Hold Down. I also like some puzzle and sports games that are kind of on larger platforms. I was thinking of stuff like Portal, the Tony Hawk games, Need for Speed, and Burnout. That's like my half category. But my the main games that I gravitate towards are the open world games and the infinitely replayable mobile games.
Yeah, so for me, the ones that you mentioned second are the ones that are the one they work for me. They work for me. So Ground Guard, Altos Odyssey. I played Altos Odyssey, got maxed out top level on that. Flip Flop Solitaire, I still play a lot. Mini Metro and Mini Motorway, those are both games that I enjoy a lot. I played Portal and Portal 2 all the way through, and that's I'll come back to that, but I think that they that's even similar in some ways. And what they all have in common is that you can invest a lot of time in these games, but the way you do it is in a series of short sessions with a beginning and an ending. And I really like that. I was actually thinking about back when I played first-person shooters a lot, and I was far more inclined to do online play than I was to play through the story. And back in the day, the stories in the early days of first-person shooters were more level-like, where you would like be on a level and then you'd solve it and then you'd move on. And those work better for me because there's a beginning and an end. But the network play was the stuff that I loved. Or on a console, if you've got something similar where it's just two people sitting there and you're playing a game and then there's a winner, because there's a beginning and there's an end. And if you have more time and more inclination to keep playing, you say, you want to go again? All right, let's go again. As opposed to kind of the open-endedness of it. Like, I'm playing Life is Strange 2 right now, which, although it has episodes and all of that, it feels very much like a long, open-ended story. And at some point, I just have to say, I can't play this anymore right now. I'm going to put it down. And that's not as appealing to me as doing a run in Altos Odyssey or playing a level or a whole playthrough of Round Guard and getting to a point and saying, okay, I'm going to stop here or it's over now. And so for me, there's something about like having it have a beginning and an end so I can pick it up, I can play it, and then there's an end where I can walk away. And, you know, although I do enjoy the Syracusian artsy-fartsy games that are 2, 3, 4 hours long, sometimes longer, like Life is Strange 2 is an example of that, the original Life is Strange, which I really liked, but it's harder for me to get into them and to find time for them. And that's the other piece of this, right, which is the iPad is my primary game platform. And the reason for that is I can play on the iPad anywhere, and I don't interfere with other people. And when I'm playing on the computer, I have to come out into the garage and turn on the computer and sit here in my chair and play a game with the door closed, probably, right? And on a console, I'm like in the middle of the living room playing on a console, which means that if anybody else wants to be in the living room or do anything in the living room, they've got my game in the way, which I don't like. I would much rather it just be me and my mm-hmm. game. So the iPad is perfect for that because I can play on that iPad on the couch, on the bed, in the hammock, like outside, like anywhere I can play. And that's the other piece of it is just being able to pick it up and play it at any point rather than having to like carve out dedicated time. Because I think in my life, Lauren and I were talking about this yesterday. I think we don't like the idea of, okay, I'm going to not spend time with you now and go off for a few hours and play a game.
Interesting.
So we don't do that. But I think, and I don't have an answer here, but I think psychologically, the big thing for me is having some feeling of kind of completion in a short period of time. And it's okay if you're building to something, right? Because Altos, you are building to doing all of those different tricks and getting to the top level. And in Round Guard, you're trying to get not only to win and to ideally win with a maximized amount of gold, but also to gather all the relics, right? Like there are long-term goals, but they're all put together by short-term functions. And then something like Flip Flop or Mini Metro, you know that game's not going to last more than 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And so you play it and then you're done and you move on with your life.
This is interesting because the way that you describe it would like kind of suggest that your gaming habits are more quote-unquote casual, but you don't play games exclusively that are considered casual games, right? Because you do play successfully much larger games that quote-unquote gamers play, right? Games like a Portal, right? And you can complete them. Right. It's not like you're bad at those types of games.
Because again, Portal, my real limitation with Portal was that I had to play it on a computer, and so I had to carve out the time. But the actual game worked for me because you play a level and like you solve it, and then you say to yourself, do I want to do another level? And if the answer is yes, you play another level and then you walk away, which is great. So that Portal is a good example where I thought, okay, it's not entirely about the context of like where I'm playing it. Mm-hmm. And as somebody pointed out in the Discord, it's absolutely intriguing to me, this idea that is gaining steam of using your console as the game engine, but streaming it to your iPad.
Right, right.
So you can play it somewhere else. It's like, I would love, and I don't think PlayStation 4 does this with the iPad, but like I would love to play that Spider-Man game, and I have it, but I don't think I'm gonna again go to the room with the PlayStation, turn on the TV, sit down, get out the controller, all of that. Like maybe there's a way to make that a little more I don't know if it's casual, just kind of drop in, but there's definitely something there. And it struck me, like, why are there games that I like? And there are other games that my friends talk about that I'm like, wow, I never want to do that. I literally never want to play Animal Crossing. I'm just not, it sounds terrible to me. And I know, I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm saying that I know within myself that game does not push the right buttons,
right?
That it's not for me.
There are ways to do this with the PlayStation 4, but they're not super simple. I think really a big part of the next generation of consoles will be enabling stuff like this. I think this is going to be one
Gotta
of the
be,
big
right?
things for the next version of the Xbox and the PlayStation is the cloud play stuff, because that's gaining much more steam. No pun intended. I do expect it to be much more of a thing for Microsoft, especially.
When Julian was playing Breath of the Wild the first time through, it was on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. And he would just sit in the corner of the living room while we were watching TV and play Breath of the Wild on the Wii U controller. Mm-hmm. And that was literally, you know, he's streaming it to the, you know, first party controller and playing it on a handheld. And then eventually, you know, we've got it on Switch so that he can do that anywhere instead of just within 8 feet of the Wii U. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can actually sympathize with this idea. I play way fewer games now that I live with my partner, right, than I used to before.
Yeah.
For the idea of, like, I don't really want to spend 10 hours this weekend doing a thing on my own. I like to do things together.
Exactly.
So there will be now, like, so the big games for me these days, they are events in that, like, there will be a few games a year where I will put that time in, but I'm not going to do it every day. Right, or every week, even.
Exactly.
And what I do like, there are games like Stardew and like Animal Crossing that me and Adina play together, right? We both play the game, right? So that I like a lot, because then we can put more time into a game, because it's a game that we both enjoy, but she doesn't enjoy all the games that I enjoy. So I will pick a few games a year where I'm like, right, I am going to choose that because this game is that important to me, but it means that I play less games overall because I'm less likely to dip into an unknown quantity, right? Like a new game, a new shooter that I've not tried, that I want to see, you know, or like it's getting mixed reviews, so I won't bother. Where before I'll be like, well, maybe I'll like it. Let me give it a go. I want a new game. So I do that way less than I used to for that reason. But I do still like to attack these large games more than you do, because it is more important to me. So I will find the time, but it's way less time for a similar reason to you.
Yeah, the idea of spending hundreds of hours on a game it turns me off, mm-hmm. and which is why I will do, for me, it's the artsy fartsy Syracuse like games that I will play a few times a year. But I want somebody to recommend something and say, this is a good one, let's do it. And it's like, okay, I'll put in 5 or 10 or 20 hours on that one. But I'm only going to do that a couple times a year. And the hundreds of hours, again, if you want me to play a game for hundreds of hours, what you need to do is be sneaky, like Alto's Odyssey, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and have it be a bunch of short bursts that I love so much that I just keep playing it all the time. In short bursts, because what I'm not going to do, and this is the truth, it's what you said, I'm not going to carve out 5 hours to go play a game by myself. I live in a house with 3 other people, and it's not going to happen. And I'm not saying that that's bad if you do that, dear listener. I'm just saying the way my life is configured, it's never going to happen. And I cannot tell you how many times I have bought a game or a console in a game saying, I'm going to play this, I'm so excited, and I've never played it. I bought Destiny and played for about 5 hours during the beta, and then it launched. And it launched the week of an Apple event, by the way. It launched the week that the iPhone launched. And I never played it after that. I literally never played it. I bought the Spider-Man game for PS4 because I love Spider-Man, and that game got such great reviews. And what happened is I had it for 2 months in secret and played it for about 2 hours. And then my son got it for his birthday and played through the entire game in less than a week. And now it's just sitting again. And will I go back to it? Maybe, but probably not, even though that makes me sad.
Yeah. I really hope that you do sometime, for some reason, find yourself playing that game, because I know you would love it, because it's so good.
I know
good,
I would.
Jason.
I know. Yeah. I know. And also, I'll throw in there something that is something I saw on Twitter this week, which is in defense of easy mode. And I thought... Mm. Yeah, I'm a believer in that, actually. I'm kind of a believer in, well, I know that there are like hard modes where yeah. it's challenging and all that, but like I'm never going to want that challenge like in a game like that. Give it to me in easy mode. Let me enjoy the story. Let me do the basics that are required to make it feel like I accomplished something. But yes, I admit it. I want a super easy mode where I can feel like I'm Spider-Man without actually having to have the reflexes of a spider, because I don't.
then you should set that game to easy mode. Like I started playing the game and bumped it down. I don't remember what I started it at. But I do this, right? Like I'm playing a game. I want to play through it, like, because I want to enjoy it. And it's too punishing to me. It's like, well, no, I'm going to bump this down so I can actually play through. And maybe when I get a bit better at the game, I'll bump it back up again. I like games that allow you to make the change rather than set it once and not being able to change right. it. So yep. that can be that's a pro tip to people. Like, games are for enjoying. And if you find yourself being punished by it, just change the difficulty level and you might enjoy it more, right?
Like, yep.
Some people Amen. Want the challenge and, like, more power to you if you do. But not everybody does. All right, let's do some hashtag ask upgrade questions to round out this episode. Thank you for bringing that topic, Jason. It was
that
went
fun.
Into places I wasn't expecting. It was really fun. This episode is brought to you by Pingdom from SolarWinds. While you've been listening to this show, how would you know if you were having troubles with your website? Would you know if your customers couldn't click that buy now button or access your content? You might stumble across this problem by luck. You might get an email. You might get a tweet. But how are you going to know that it's happening when it's happening, whenever it's happening? You need a system for that. You need Pingdom. You need something that's going to tell you when everything is running smoothly on your site, and more importantly, when it isn't. Pingdom detects around 13 million outages every month. That is more than 400,000 a day across the whole web. And this is just actually of the sites that they are monitoring, right? Pingdom can help keep your sites and the sites that you love online, and they do. Want Relay FM, for example, we use Pingdom. If there's any problem on our website, Pingdom lets us know and we can fix it. It doesn't matter if you're a startup or a Fortune 500 company, you want to know when you're having problems with your website. Your website is there for people to visit it. If they can't, you want to know about that. And Pingdom can also let you customize how you're alerted depending on the severity of an outage. They can track and analyze your website's load time so you can see what is affecting the experience of your users. If you have a site of any size, you need Pingdom. They have a no fuss approach to get started. Just give them the URL that you want to monitor. They take care of everything else. You can get a 14-day free trial with no credit card required by going to pingdom.com/relayfm. Then use the code upgrade at checkout when you sign up and you'll get a huge 30% off your first invoice. A thanks to Pingdom from SolarWinds for their support of this show and Relay FM. All right, we'll finish this episode off with some hashtag ask upgrade questions. The first one this week comes from Kevin. Kevin wants to know, will there be a running score update of the episode 400 draft after each Apple announcement, or is the time capsule sealed?
I personally would like to not think about it until episode 400.
Me
and
too.
Then have a reveal, and just, I'm going to forget what we even picked.
I have.
I've already forgotten.
I can confirm to you right now, I have forgotten what has been picked.
Yeah, so if people want to track it, they're welcome to, but I'd actually rather not know. So like if something happens that one of us picked, I'd actually rather not even know that we picked it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to wait 100 weeks and be surprised.
Yep, we do need people to let us know as episode 400 approaches, just to make sure that we're remembering that we need to check that back, because
yes.
I also do not guarantee that I will remember. I do have a note in my task manager, but still,
right.
If it pops into your mind, or maybe you're listening to this show like at weird times, people do that, right? They listen to current episodes and go back to old ones. Maybe just by luck, you're around episode 397 or something, just in real time, just let us know. that there's a draft that we need to redo.
Yeah.
Alex asks, with Apple not having the ability to have in-person time with developers this year, do you think that iOS 14 could see more focus on the iOS system apps, this way making developers not having so many things to learn?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It will be interesting to see. We'd already been thinking that if you look at the cadence of Apple software releases, they've had... This year was a kind of cataclysmic software release cycle, and then the previous year was a quiet one where they kind of fixed stuff, and then the previous year was a, again, terrible buggy release cycle. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if the goal with iOS 14 and with the next version of macOS as well is less reliance on new features and more on stability and getting things working okay. And that would also mean not unveiling a bazillion new APIs to developers for like whatever the new thing is. I'm sure there will be some, but being kind to developers, especially after last year where they spent all summer kind of like dealing with bugs and are still not even like, there's still people out there who are working on Catalyst apps, and there's going to be a new version of Catalyst presumably. So and they haven't shipped their apps yet. So, like, taking it easy on that front and instead focusing on some other stuff. I mean, I assume that Swift UI and maybe Catalyst will get a bump because they need it. But I could also see this being a year where Apple retrenches a little bit and kind of focuses on fixing bugs and upgrading its own built-in apps, and that would be okay.
Yeah, definitely. I think I would quite like to see that myself. Michael asks, what would you like to see in the next iMac refresh or redesign?
The bezels have got to come in. I think the iMac design, as nice as it is, the bezels are enormous, and we live in a world where all the bezels are shrinking, and the iMac needs to do that. And I know people are like, oh, well, yeah, but it's a desktop computer. Who cares? And indeed, who cares how thin it is? And yet they made it thinner, too. But I do think that bringing it in so that it's more just a screen floating in front of you and not a screen with a big black rectangle around it and then a big silver rectangle below it, like, to make that less has to be a design goal. And then I want the spinning discs out. And it may be that the next iMac even is an ARM Mac, but if not, then it'll presumably have like a T2 and be kind of the modern, like the iMac Pro is. So, but those are my top things, is bring the bezels in and get rid of spinning disk support forever.
The visual design is the big thing for me. I mean, I would also like to see something like Face ID. Might be kind of fun.
I'd honestly like to see them try something totally different, but I think they're pretty committed now to the floating screen. I'd love to see them try to do something like the G4 iMac, right? Where there's like a base that has the fancy, you know, computery stuff in it, and then the screen is just this floating object. That would be pretty awesome, but I doubt it. I doubt they're going to do that.
All right, next question comes from Blanc, and they ask, are you aware of any family-friendly solutions to share and manage sensitive information such as social security numbers or Bling account numbers, not just text, but documents or files as well? I think one password for families is a great option for this. I use it for this stuff.
Yeah, I use it too. I'm sure there are other ways of doing it, but that's what we use, is 1Password. We have a family account and all sorts of documents and stuff, and everybody's passport numbers and all of that stuff is in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing for it, because it can be numbers and logins and that kind of stuff, but you can also have scans of stuff, images, like I share like passport images and stuff like that in there. Like, you can get all kinds of great stuff in that. So that's one of the reasons that I use it. I use it for business stuff and family stuff.
Can you do encrypted notes in iOS that are shared?
I know you can do shared notes. I don't know about encrypted notes. Like, yeah, locked, do you mean? Like the locked ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if you can.
That. I've never tried that one. But I still would personally prefer 1Password to that than doing those shared notes.
Yeah, looks like you can't lock a shared note.
Right, there you go then.
Yep.
Kevin asks, how is Jason's wife's Lauren's, that's a funny sentence, iPhone, how is Lauren's iPhone 10 battery issue? Kevin had the same issue, but it broke the cellular circuit, so it was way too expensive to fix. Can we get an update?
I went on Apple's website for support and said the battery expanded, and they said, okay, send it in. And they said, it looks to me like this is a covered issue and we're not going to charge you. And I sent it in, and they didn't send it back, right? They sent a different iPhone 10 with the same specs, because I think that's how they do it, is they send that right back to you, and then they put the other one in the queue to be refurbed and sent out to someone else. So we didn't get charged, which I think is only right, since it was their battery that expanded and pushed everything out of the iPhone. So I don't know what method that Kevin used here, but a swollen iPhone battery, at least in my experience, was something that Apple was I would have paid to fix it, but I felt like Apple should fix it, because that's like literally their battery doing damage to the phone. And they did. I didn't even have to pay for the battery swap.
Yeah, I think that's how I would expect it. I think that makes sense. And finally today, Jared asks, what combination of Twitter and RSS do you use, if any? How do you see those tools as similar, different, or complementary?
I'm using RSS more than I used to. Mm-hmm. I'm using NetNewsWire the new open source version of NetNewsWire, primarily on my iPad, with a limited number of stuff that I'm subscribed to. And it is the first time I've used RSS regularly in a long time. But I use that sort of like at a certain time of day, like in the morning or in the evening, where I'm sitting down and I want to look and see what I can read. Whereas Twitter kind of comes and goes throughout the day. So breaking news and things from sources that are not my go-to sources happen on Twitter. And then my go-to sources happen a couple of times a day in NetNewsWire. And that is also where I do things like compile links for Liftoff. Like I've got a bunch of space RSS feeds in there, and those will get shared out of there into the Liftoff Tumblr and things like that. That they'll come from there. But Twitter is more breaking news and sources that are outside my usual set. What about you?
Exactly the same. So I use RSS now, and I use Reader, but the idea of like I have stuff in there that I definitely want to make sure I check these sources, or these are sources for good news for me for shows. So I really like that I have that there as like this is where I know I can go to get information if I'm looking for it, and I will check it maybe once a day, once every 2 days for me. It depends on what shows that I'm recording at a time. And then I will use Twitter for that exact stuff, right? Like breaking news, other sources, getting different types of information, and also like news sources that aren't necessarily like, I know I'm going to have checked this one to make sure that I'm prepared for a show.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very similar, very similar. All right, so I think that's it for this week's episode. Oh. You can send in Ask Upgrade questions with the hashtag Ask Upgrade on Twitter, or if you're a Relay FM member in the Relay FM members Discord, just use the command ? Ask Upgrade, and you can have them asked there. The great thing about that is they can be longer than a tweet if you want to. So we thank everyone who is a Relay FM member who is part of the Relay FM members Discord as well. That's great. We're doing everything we can to make that even more and more exciting as time goes on. We have some stuff coming up real soon on that one. So next week's episode is going to be the draft episode, which we're so excited about. We're going to be working diligently on getting that one prepared for you. If you want to find us online, there's a few places to do that. On Twitter, Jason is at jsnell, J-S-N-E-L-L. I am at imike, I-M-Y-K-E. You can find Jason's work over at sixcolors.com, theincomparable.com, and Jason is the host of many shows here at Relay FM, as am I as well. Thanks so much to Pingdom, Bombus, and Uni for their support of this show, and also to our Relay FM members as well, who also help make this show happen, and to you, our listeners, for tuning in every week. We'll be back next time. Until then, say goodbye, Jason Snell.
Goodbye, Mike Hurley.